between Washington Avenue and the Mississippi River is being transformed to accommodate new places to live and work. Everyone is invited to attend and hear the latest news about the project and next steps. May 2nd, 5:30 p.m. at 2001 Plymouth Avenue North. More information can be found by searching for Upper Harbor at the MinneapolisMN.gov.
Welcome to a special episode of Counter Stories. As many of you know, our co-founder and co-host Donald Eubanks passed away in March. He was laid to rest next to his mother in the traditional Ojibwe way on the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe Indian Reservation. On April 13th, 2024, the Counter Stories crew was honored to co-host a Celebration of Life event in the Twin Cities. Today, we bring you some of the stories shared at the event.
So my name is Anthony Galloway. I'm one of the members of the Counter Stories crew who was on the podcast and radio show with Don for so many years, since 2014, and I'm going to be your MC for today. I am a pastor in the AME church, but I'm not going to be long-winded because Don would hate that. So we're going to move accordingly. I want to just start off by saying thank you so much to the folks here at Metro State for opening the space to us. I want to thank Sonia Davila Williams and President Jenny Arthur for helping to make this space. Can we just give them a round of applause and thank them for opening the space to us? I want to thank Mukwa Coffee and Representative Becker Finn for helping to provide refreshments. Nancy Allion from Keitao Street Eats. And in progress for the printing of the posters. And of course, our Counter Stories crew members, Hli Lee and Luz Maria Frias, for helping to help coordinate with the family. And Mara, Raf, most importantly, we want to thank Mara, Raf, and Gabby. We want to thank you all for letting us have Don in our lives as well and be able to share in celebration. Now, this is a celebration of life, okay? Don has gone on to his journey in the traditional way, already happened in Mille Lacs. So we are here to celebrate life and memories. Does everybody understand what that means? Okay, so yes, we can experience and grief and sadness and all of those things, but we are here to celebrate life. I'm gonna say that one more time. We're here to celebrate life, all right? Because you know Don would hate us making all this big fuss about him if he was here in person, and so let's go ahead and celebrate and have a good time around that, okay? So I wanna start off by inviting on up a mentor, elder, and friend, Don, interned under him. And so we're going to invite John Pupart to come and give us our first remarks of the program.
In some ways, we've traveled through the sadness as Don has departed, as we say in the Anishinaabe way, through the Western door. And we've all wished him well. And I was a part of Don's life, and we had a lot of good times. They weren't always on the golf course, of course. There were a lot of other times. But Don was really an inspiration. He was an inspirational person. He was humorous. He was a leader. He was a beacon for a lot of people. He taught a lot of us, and there were others who followed him. He was smart, quick-witted. He always seemed to have a smile on his face. He was just really a happy person, whatever he was doing. He always gave thought, deep thought, to what he was doing. And it showed in his work. I remember when he first came to me, I was the founder and president of the American Indian Policy Center. He wanted to be involved with us and what we were doing. We were doing research with the intent of telling the truth about the American Indian oral history, our spiritual and cultural ways, and he wanted to be a part of that. I remember he used to always say, But John, It wasn't a disagreement, but he was always challenging ways of thought, and he had his way of doing things. We wouldn't disagree, but he always had an alternative way, but that he wanted to be heard. And we had different reflections on things, and that was good for me, and it was good for people around him. And he made people think as well as himself. And we were, of course, from different generations. And we saw things in a wider lens that way. And it was good for me, good for the Policy Center. And we're all better off for that. But one of the things that that challenged all of us around us is that he was going at the University of Minnesota, and he wanted a placement as a graduate student, as an intern at the Policy Center. And he knew what he was doing. It was innovative. And he wanted to be a part of that challenge. And he saw the poverty, the chemical dependency, the homelessness, the crime and delinquency in the Indian communities. And he wouldn't rest well with that. He wanted to, you know, help rid our communities of those things. And both on and off the reservations, of course. And he wanted a placement there. But the University of Minnesota turned him down. Apparently that wasn't the ideal placement for him, they thought. So they declined. And he came to me and he said, they won't approve my placement here. And I challenged him and I said, Don, if you really want to fight this, do you really want to get into a fight? And do you think we can win this? He said, well, I want to challenge him. I want to fight this. And I said, okay, let's do it. And he said, and we said, how can you decline something that you don't know anything about? What do you know about the oral history of American Indians? What do you know of that? And when we know, because we've researched and we've talked to the elders and they've told us this information. So we have this Indian way of knowing. We've been there, we've researched it, we know it. So how can you decline this? And in the end, we won that out, and Don was placed with us, and that's how it was part of his master's program. And that's the way I will always remember. He was a fighter. He knew what he wanted, and he knew how to fight to get it. As you know, Don was part American Indian and part African American. And he has showed me the respect and dignity that he carried in both worlds, that he had depth of knowledge in both ways, and he had the finesse in both communities and respect and dignity. He carried himself in both communities, and he took great pride in that. And one of the things on the Indian side of Don is that he acknowledged the seven values in the Anishinaabe way. We call them the seven traditions, the seven fires, the seven prophecies, but these are the things that have been handed down to us orally, that they aren't written anyplace, they're not scripted, they're not recorded. These are the things that are handed down to us that we individually must know, we must learn them from our elders, from our old people. And today we are in the seventh fire of those cascading traditions. The reason I bring up this prophecy is that some say that we are now in it and to face the kinds of things that we do face today. And these are the things that Don devoted himself to. The human services in his real life experiences. He knew the devastating outcomes and results of these things that came upon the Indian community in his life. Chemical abuse, dropping out of education, hanging out in the streets and unemployment. These were the challenges of the eighth fire. And Don saw these challenges, and he chose to make the world a better place by choosing to work in social work, in the human services. He's good at it, and his whole professional life was spent there. And even afterward, Don would always seem, he would seem to say, I have seen that in a great undertaking. It is not enough for a man to depend simply upon himself. He always asked for help or for partnership with others. He worked well with others. He worked well in teamwork. This was the way of the traditional Indians. We all worked in communal ways, and Don always did that. He worked well in teamwork. Thank you very much. Gigawabamin.
I want to thank our elder and dear brother John Poupart for opening us up and getting us started today. I'm going to bring up Professor Robert O'Connor. He's the associate professor and department chair of the Metro State School of Social Work to give remarks, and you'll see that the remarks from today will come from many different aspects of Don's life. So, Professor O'Connor, please welcome.
It's great to follow John Poupart. I had invited John to my research class one time and getting ready to graduate senior social workers, and he came in to be able to share a little bit about research from his perspective and got the students around, and he sat down, and the first thing he said is, you know, I don't like social workers. And so it made sense that this was Don's mentor, you know, because Don would just say what he felt like saying, and he would love to, ha, and just kind of look at you to see if, you know, how you took that. But he meant it, you know. Don was in our faculty for about 7 years. But long before that, Don was a member of the first graduating class of our social work program way back in about 1995. Yes. And of course, with Don, it wasn't enough just to be a member of the graduating class. He had to be the president of the Social Work Student Association. And so, yes, that was Don, right? And then as my mentors brought me on here, we had a retiring faculty member, Don Bebo. I remember they were thinking ahead about who was gonna be the next professor, and they kept mentioning this Don Eubanks guy. And they said, yeah, Don, you know, where's Don and what's he doing? And does he have a paper left to do, or, you know, all this stuff that he still needed to do? But his mentors were listened to him as when he was the president, the SWASA. And so they listened to him, and they just actually shared, Marilyn and Mary Martin, the founders of the social work program. Would you raise your hand there? In the very back there. So they listened to Don. Don said, no, you guys are doing it all wrong. Right? You have to have the program on these days and only on these days so that they could, you know, work and have their life all imbalanced and those sorts of things. And so they did every single thing that Don suggested, and it worked. You know, our program specializes in cross-cultural social work, so that people can really be better prepared to meet the needs of the emerging racial communities here in our society. And that was Don, right? Cross-cultural. Not only was he biracial, but he was also cross-cultural, as John was saying, able to kind of traverse that bicultural continuum and put in the time and put in the work. And he was a master at being able to really speak from both of those perspectives. In fact, he taught a class called Comparative Racial Ethnic Analysis, Part 1. And that was like his go-to class. He loved to teach that. And he would go ahead and get the students all riled up. And even the most intimidating students would come out like, I'm scared of Don. We're like, yeah, good job, Don. You know, put them in check and let them know what this is really going to be like. And we're like, no, he's fine. We're like, wow. And he would always say, okay, but you're not going to pass my class if you don't know how many federally recognized tribes there are in Minnesota. Can you tell me? Can you tell me? And the students, by the time they're done, like, 11? You just, that's right. You know, so he, Don had his footprint and his thumbprint on every single one of our students. He was also the director of field, which is our internship program. And so they kind of had to go through him before they could get out and do their social work practice in the field. And I've heard this saying before, where you can take an apple and you can open the apple and you can see how many seeds are in the apple. You can count the number of seeds in the apple. But you really cannot count the number of apples in those seeds. You never know. And with Don, we've seen the seeds that he has sown while he has been here, but also in the rest of his practice area. But we'll never know, really, the full impact of the fruit of his work. It is already bearing fruit and has bore fruit since the time that he started here. But his fingers and the fruit of his efforts will continue to go forward through our program, forever changed and forever influenced, and forever bearing the fruit that Don produced. So thank you very much on behalf of the social work program.
I love that 100% honesty. And Don brought it up. I see some brothers who were part of some of Don's engagement at McAllister College under Elder Mahmoud. And he would always talk about the hijinks that came up with being in a space of being unapologetic. Now we're going to hear remarks from a lifelong friend of Don's, Michael Turner.
Professor Don Eubanks. Really? I mean, really. If when we're back at Mac, right, if I had said that to Don, we'd have both looked at each other and just bust out laughing. But, you know, what a comeback. You know, I've seen some comebacks in my time. This was one for the ages. Turned his life around. A lot of challenges. Very strong man, very strong person. And he not only turned it around, but he quadrupled it. So proud of him. So proud of him. Now, we met as kids, and Don was a little, I thought he was a little shy, actually, as a kid, right? We played football together. I remember coming across, I was a receiver, catching a pass, and all of a sudden the lights went out. I got ringing in my ears. And I'm sitting on the ground, I'm looking around, what the heck happened? I turn around, here's Don, just laughing his butt off. I said, Don, what's going on? He just kept laughing. So that was Don, that was my friend. We talked frequently over the years. And of course, he never talked about his kids. usually the first 10 minutes of that conversation, about our bad knees. Don usually won that, you know, that conversation. So we talked a lot about, you know, keeping our health and, you know, what we're gonna do. I mean, it's kind of hit me really hard. I was not prepared for this, but, you know, I am so happy to see what's happening here. This is fantastic. I don't know, Don would probably think it's a little overkill, but, right? But if you know Don, but I'm so happy. I'm so happy to see this. It makes me feel good. We were at Sweeney's Saloon. We were just talking. So Don leans back in his chair, and he's just, you know how he is, just talking and laughing and stuff. Just lean back like that. Boom! Chair goes down flat. I mean flat. And he's sitting there, and he goes, nobody better laugh. And I'm like, it was quiet. I swear you couldn't hear a pin drop. I couldn't hold it. I just bust out laughing. And then he started laughing. Then the whole room started laughing. I think a lot of it was nervous laughter after the fact. But that was Don. That's so funny. We talked about that for years afterwards. You know, a really great friend. I'm going to miss him immensely. Thank you.
You're listening to Counter Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. This program is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To read Don's obituary, see photos from the event, and to leave stories or memories with the crew and Don's family, visit our Facebook and Instagram pages.
I am Beverly Bushyhead, and I am honored to have loved and been loved by Don. Don Eubanks has been an influential leader across sectors, communities, and cultures. He was a very good friend of mine, a business partner, and a valued mentor. He led through tough love. He didn't mince words or hold back on holding himself and others accountable. Yet, I also saw him nurturing and understanding us by holding us in a place of non-judgment and support while recognizing our vulnerabilities, flaws, and shortcomings. He accepted us as we are and gave us room to confront our weaknesses in the light of his admiration. So it was this mixture of blunt honesty and gentle acceptance that Don influenced all who knew him. Don had no patience for bullshit. He knew we could do better than that, and he expected us to. He expected it of himself as well. That's what made him so excellent. For me, Don was a great supporter. When I ran headlong into situations, he saw clearer than I did. He chuckled and said, "Well, I'm here if you need me, Bev." Which meant to me, "You got this, but really, Bev, why?" He had wisdom I hope I'll continue to learn from. It was enough to know he was always watching. He was on my side. That is everything. Thank you, Don, for always believing in me, for believing in a better future, for believing in a healing community, and thank you for being optimistic. Your stories are now part of me, part of the working community, and part of the magic we will miss that was Don Eubanks. And his laugh was pure medicine. I hear the echoes of his laughter in my heart. I hope I will never forget it. I love you, Don Eubanks. Journey well, my friend and brother, until we meet again for more adventures.
You're listening to Counter Stories, a program by people of color, for people of color, and everybody else. This program is supported by AMPERS and the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To read Don's obituary, see photos from the event, and to leave stories or memories with the crew and Don's family, visit our Facebook and Instagram pages.
Many of you know that Don was a member of a podcast and radio show called Counter Stories, which began at NPR when then Chris Roberts, a producer and the head of the newsroom at that point, wanted to have a space for people of color to engage and talk about things in a real way. And they had some of us come in. And I remember Luce and Hlee, myself and Don were in this room kind of talking about what this could look like. And we kind of looked at each other and said, look, if we're going to do this, we're going to be 100% honest. And so we gave NPR the business. We went all the way in because we said if we're going to be constructive, you know, they ain't going to put us on the air anyway. So Chris Roberts calls us back and is like, yeah, we want you to come in. We think we could do this. And we were like, uh-oh. But it was cool. And so we began in 2014. Now Counter Stories has found a new home at AMPERS Radio. At this time, I'd like to invite the Counter Stories crew to come up. And Tom, you got to come up here too. Tom Weber's one of the reasons that we survived our first kind of clash with NPR and differences and things like that, who was with us as well. Don was our guy. He would over and over again say, even though we've talked about what we were going to talk about, we laid out the subject matter, we've sent out the article space.
There were articles, emails, and texts.
Right, Luz is our data guru. Would say, I'm not quite sure what we're talking about, but then in the middle of the show, would drop the knowledge and the wisdom that made the show what it was. And he would always walk around with that humility, but y'all, when he get going, he would always make Counter Stories real. Always. Always. If any point we weren't a podcast by people of color, for people of color, and everyone else, he would make sure to name it so that we could flip the script and get back into our conversation and take it much deeper. So we, as the Counter Stories crew, are just so happy to have been able to have and spend that time to get that wisdom, to be put on notice, and to make sure that our consciousness of Native experience always is part of what we do wherever we go. So from the Counter Stories crew, to you all who lent us your father and husband and friend and community member for all of these 10 years. This is the 10th year. This is the 10-year anniversary of the founding of the Counter Stories podcast and radio show. And so we thank you for lending us him and allowing us to walk with you and walk with him. I'm going to bring up the family of our dear brother, Don Eubanks, Mara, Gabby, and Raph to come on up to give us our closing remarks.
Nothing can really prepare you for this, but just family and friends in the community that have shown up in this tough time. It's been amazing. And when I was super young playing basketball, you know, it's the middle of the game, you know, family and, you know, everybody's cheering and, you know, in the gymnasium and super loud. I've got the ball and I shoot and I miss, right? And I probably got the rebounded again because I was like a foot taller than everybody at that time. Shoot and miss, right? And I'm just focused on the game. And again, it's pretty loud in there. In the midst of all this, all I can hear is, use the backboard! Use the backboard! And when I tell you that I had never been more embarrassed in my life, but that was my dad, and could hear him over everyone. So we have my dad's Indian name listed on his obituary. You might have seen that in some of the things. So I'm probably gonna do it a disjustice, but as I'm aware, it's Gitgibbonais, which in Ojibwe means spotted eagle. And so that's one way I know my dad's always gonna be here, especially if I'm out on the golf course and I see an eagle, I just know that that's my dad here.
Yeah, he was a great dad. And I just want to say thank you for being here. And I got to hear a lot of stories about, like, different aspects of his life that I don't know. Just because to me, he was a great dad. And that's how I'll remember him as. So thank you.
I also wanted to thank everyone for coming today. Don absolutely loved each and every one of you in this room. You really meant a lot to him, and these past few years were really difficult for him because his knees were very, very bad. And with COVID, he was very, very, very concerned about getting sick. He lost his mom and his uncle to COVID. So in thinking about Don and about how hard he worked throughout his life, and he was so happy to finally retire and try and do what he wanted to do, golf and fish, and wasn't always able to do that. This is something he would say, and I apologize for any French, but it would go like, ain't that a bitch?
This has been Counter Stories, a co-production of the Counter Stories crew and Ampers, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram and find previous episodes on our website, counterstories.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Programming on KFAI is supported in part by Proof Alliance, working to prevent prenatal alcohol exposure, and support families that are affected by fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, or FASD, a permanent brain-based disability characterized by a wide range of physical, mental, cognitive, and behavioral symptoms. FASD is caused by prenatal alcohol exposure and impacts 1 in 20 children in the U.S. More information and support online at proofalliance.org.
Tener su teléfono en la mano mientras conduces, ilegal, no hay excusas. Por ley, solo puede usar los celulares con dispositivos manos libre. Deje el teléfono.